Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The FT.
Santander is continuing its dominance of the UK high street, but are savers benefiting? Rogue letting agents are on the rise. We offer tips to tenants and landlords. And how to make your home more energy efficient before the government cuts incentives. All this to come in this week's FT Money Show. I'm Alice Ross, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with my colleagues from FT Money, Steve Lodge.
Hello.
Tanya Paley.
Hi.
And our special studio guest, Claire Barrett, Associate Editor of the Investors Chronicle.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news. This week, Santander rebranded all of its Alliance and Leicester branches with the Spanish bank name. Customers will soon have their mortgage, savings and investment products rebranded as well. Customers are now being offered access to Santander deals, including its fee-free zero account. However, they will not get the £100 joining bonus that customers from other banks get if they sign up with Santander. So, Steve, what does this mean for former Alliance and Leicester customers? Will their products change at all?
Well, Alice, I mean, it's good news if you use Alliance and Leicester branches or use branches generally, because suddenly you can go from using 300 Alliance and Leicester to now the new total, as at the end of this month, of 1,300 Santander branches up and down the country, which really makes Santander a major high street force in terms of the branding, nearly as big as HSBC, indeed.
Will there be any changes to their products if they're on existing mortgage rates, savings rates? Will those stay the same?
In terms of the branding, they will generally change over. So you'll see a sort of loss of the Alliance and Leicester card you had, Alliance and Leicester checkbook and so on. But in terms of the rates, no. There'll be no change in the actual rates, certainly not initially. You mentioned mortgage borrowers. I mean, that's one particular group where maybe especially Alliance and Leicester customers should look at switching, because they're on a standard variable, or tens of thousands of them are on a standard variable rate of 4.99%, whereas the Santander rate is 4.29. Now, Santander naughtily is not switching them over to that 4.24. So they're paying 0.75% more.
So they'll have to make the decision themselves to move. They'll have to kind of notice.
Absolutely, right. Yes. And there will be similar anomalies probably across the savings book as well. But the most substantial one is almost certainly those people who are on the standard, the go-to mortgage rates that you go to after your fixed rate or your tracker rates has finished.
Is Santander generally one of the more competitive lenders with savings rates? Would it generally have the best deals on the high street at the moment?
Well, I think Santander is quite interesting. It's if you like, the new player, the new kid on the block. It's what Halifax was doing until a few years ago. And one of its interesting themes, I mean, we shouldn't attach too much importance to these things because, of course, all banks are extremely cynical. But one of its interesting themes is to actually reward people who have different products. So enabling, giving them access to better rates, for example, on the savings side, or access to, you mentioned, a Santander zero current account, which gives you no cost access to currency when you're abroad, for example. So they do some interesting things, but they've also got a hell of a lot of savings accounts paying very low rates, for example. In a Which report that I wrote about a couple of weeks ago, they were actually the banking group with the most individual products with rates at those rock bottom levels.
And when you mention that, another negative point about Santander, I think, is that it's also the bank with the most number of complaints from customers, at least relative to how many customers it actually has. Is that an ongoing issue for them?
It has, with, if you like, the greater transparency on complaints led by the FSA and the Financial Ombudsman Service, it's rightly shown up that Santander has been blooming awful in recent years, at least. I suppose in one sense, I mean, frankly, all the banks are pretty bad. So Santander, and I think the measure you mentioned was in proportion to the number of customer transactions. There are a number of different ways of measuring these things. But yes, it has been extremely bad. To be fair, they claim they are making a lot of strides to improve. So that's probably a good sign, of course, whereas there's not a lot of evidence that much of the financial services industry is doing much to improve its complaints handling. But unfortunately, complaints with banks are a necessary evil. I mean, fundamentally, banks do get a lot of complaints because, of course, people transact through them. So they have a lot of transactions and sooner or later some do go wrong. And yes, they use appalling call centres where people aren't empowered to actually resolve issues, or in many cases, frankly, can't be bothered.
So some good news and perhaps some bad news for Alliance and Leicester customers that are now going to move to Santander. Thanks very much for that, Steve. And for more on Santander and what to do if you are a former Alliance and Leicester customer, look out for Steve's article in this weekend's FT Money with the Weekend FT and online at ft.com/money. Still to come on the show, energy efficient schemes for your home. First, though, rogue letting agents. With accidental landlords on the rise and tenants who cannot afford to buy flooding the market, some people are unfortunately spotting an opportunity to make money. Rogue letting agents are on the rise and are ripping off both landlords and tenants to the tune of hundreds of thousands of pounds. That's according to an investigation this week by the Financial Times publication The Investor's Chronicle. It found that reports of fraud were on the rise, while many letting agents remain unregulated. I'm here with Claire Barrett of the Investors Chronicle. Claire, how big a problem is this?
Well, as you'd expect, Alice, with more people renting a property because they can't afford to buy one, there are more people complaining about bad practice from letting agents. Now, ARLA, which is the Association of Residential Letting Agents, has told us that fraud reports about its members are as high as they have ever been, and complaints generally are rising fast. The Property Ombudsman has received 5,000 complaints so far this year, he tells us, just about letting agents. However, a quarter of those calls he can't do anything about because the agents are not regulated. Now, unlike estate agents who sell property, letting agents who rent property have no legal requirement to be regulated by a trade body or to be covered by the Ombudsman's redress scheme. So, in fact, 40% of all letting agents, he estimates, are completely unregulated. And if you have a problem with one of those, then you're really in trouble because it's much more difficult to progress a complaint.
And tell me, what kind of problems might you have with these letting agents? What kind of fraud is happening here?
Well, the biggest bugbear is misappropriation of client money. Now, in plain English, this is the letting agent taking money that doesn't belong to him or her. They're either taking a deposit from the tenants, saying that they're putting it in a deposit registration scheme and then just keeping it, or more likely taking the rent from the tenants and not passing it on to the landlord or passing it on late. Now, with the unregulated agents, we have evidence that many of these are just using one account for all of their business transactions. They don't have a separate bank account for client funds. They're using those client funds, the rents and deposits coming in, to finance their businesses. Now, technically, this is potentially fraudulent and very frowned upon. All of the big trade associations like ARLA and the RICS won't let their members operate if that's the case. They want to see clear evidence that you've got separate accounts for both and that you're taking care of your clients' money. Now, in the environment we're in, letting agency is a very cutthroat game, and also there's a lot of buy-to-let landlords who are feeling the pinch with mortgage rates, so maybe they're not using a letting agent and they're doing it themselves and going around to collect the rent every week, which means there's less business for all of these letting agents to compete for, and it's quite low margin. So unfortunately, the other problem that's happening is that many of them are going bust. And if they are unregulated and they don't have their accounts straight, then when they go bust, the money's lost, and for the poor old landlord and tenant, it's gone. There's nothing they can do about it.
Steve?
But Claire, the issue of deposits has long been a problem, of course, and from a tenant perspective, getting back those deposits. But I thought there was an initiative a couple of years ago to have set up a tenant's deposit fund, which would put the money aside and would arbitrate over disputes between landlords and tenants, regardless of the involvement of a letting agent.
You're completely right, Steve. In 2007, it was made law that all tenancy deposits have to be placed in one of three government-approved schemes. And if the landlord doesn't do this within 14 days of the tenancy starting, the tenant can be awarded three times the level of that deposit as compensation, which in London could be £6,000-£8,000 for a modest flat. But what landlords don't realise, especially those who are new to renting out houses, is that the way the law words it is that it's the landlord who's responsible if that deposit goes missing. So if your agent says, oh, here you are, tenant, I'll take the deposit and put it in the scheme, but doesn't do that, and you only find out later when it goes missing, it doesn't matter. The landlord is still liable to A, replace it, and B, be fined if the tenant knows their legal rights.
So the agent's running off with the deposit, and the landlord is none the wiser, and the tenant obviously has lost their money.
Yes, and but the landlord has to replace that money. But often landlords don't realise that they have to do this, and then nasty negotiations can incur between the two parties.
And tenants, I think, also don't realise their rights, do they? I think you mentioned there were instances of some landlords asking tenants for the deposits back, and tenants are paying it because they don't realise that they don't have to.
Yes, and obviously that shouldn't happen. If you go through a regulated letting agent, then one of the responsibilities of the letting agent is to explain the law to you as a landlord and where you stand. And as a tenant, if you're going to an agent who's regulated, then you should have comfort in the fact that if there is a problem, you can complain to the ombudsman and you'll have an independent third party who can sort out the details of the problem and, if necessary, award you compensation.
And just finally, briefly, is there hope on the horizon here? Is there any talk of the government actually regulating letting agents?
Sorry, but no. The Investors Chronicle approached Grant Shapps from the offices of communities and local government, and they did issue us with a statement which says that they do not believe blanket regulation is a solution. However, they do admit there is a problem. They say we're exploring with industry partners how best to counter poor practice by unscrupulous agents without additional regulation, which they say would harm tenants' interests by pushing up rents and restricting the availability of housing available to rent. Well, I would counter from that, Grant, if you're listening, if you don't protect landlords, they're not going to rent properties out and meet the housing gap of this nation. Nobody has to be a landlord. They can easily sell those properties and put the money in the stock market or somewhere else. If there's not a proper mechanism for them to invest their money safely and fairly, then they're going to walk away from the buy-to-let market and there'll be less houses.
Thanks for that, Claire. So if you're a tenant or a landlord, know your rights and check your contract and use a regulated letting agent. And for full details, read our article in the FT Money section this weekend and on our website, ft.com/money. Or, and pick up a copy of the Investors Chronicle this weekend for the full investigation. Finally today, energy efficient schemes. Homeowners and landowners interested in generating their own renewable electricity are being advised to act now before the government makes rates on its feed-in tariff scheme less attractive. The FIT scheme, also known as the Clean Energy Cashback Scheme, provides payments to households, communities, land and property owners who generate their own renewable electricity. People are then able to secure an additional income stream by selling the electricity they generate to the national grid. Tanya, this scheme has been around for a while. Has it been popular with homeowners?
Well, it's actually only been around since April this year. So we've actually seen quite a large uptake so far. I mean, there's been, in terms of the domestic side of things, there's been more than 13,500 schemes that have been installed since April this year. And out of that, the majority seem to be with solar photovoltaics power.
Putting solar panels on your roof or
something. Yeah, or constructing it in your garden or something like that. But that seems to be the most kind of popular one at the moment. I think that's probably largely because it's the kind of lowest upfront cost to install. I mean, that's probably going to be the part of the thing that appeals, and it's probably going to be the kind of system that most homeowners can actually use. The FIT scheme is actually applicable for things such as wind turbines, you've got anaerobic digestion, you've got hydroelectricity. So some of these are quite site specific. I mean, you're not going to have everyone's not going to have a stream or water that they can make use of the hydroelectricity power. So that's the sort of thing that you need to kind of bear in mind first. That's why solar power seems to be the most popular.
And why now? Why is this FIT scheme under threat?
There's just talk about, I mean, we've seen kind of a drop off in these installations prior to the spending review in October, because there was always murmurings that the government would look to actually reduce the rates that they're actually offering to homeowners and landowners. I mean, that actually proved unfounded, and they've actually said in the spending review that they would probably review the current rates in 2012, with possibly rates either being increased or reduced, probably more likely reduced, from 2013, like April 1st, 2013. Mm. So a lot of the agents I've been speaking to have been saying that this is like a perfect opportunity now to kind of take advantage of the current rates. Because also a lot of these schemes actually take quite a while to install. I mean, if you're a landowner, you're looking to kind of create a wind power farm, I mean, sometimes that could take up to 2 years.
Mm. But if you install one of these schemes, say you go for the easier one, solar panels, that's, despite the tariff, that's still quite a big upfront cost, isn't it? You're looking at about 10 grand
yep.
of your own money, mm-hmm. then it's going to take years to get that back.
Yep.
When are you going to start actually making money? When will this become a good investment?
Again, it varies very much to do with the system that you're installing and the size of the system. I mean, with solar power, that's actually going to be one of the ones that's going to be the longest to kind of actually get your upfront costs back. I mean, for one of those 10,000 ones, it could be 12 years sometimes, actually. Mm. Wind turbines actually produce the highest rate of returns, so they tend to the payback tends to be shorter. Mm. So it's really kind of weighing up your options. I mean, you've got to really look at kind of what size scheme you're installing, what the upfront costs are. I mean, obviously, you can also get loans that can help with that upfront cost. Mm. But it's really kind of factoring when you're going to get this kind of return on your investment.
Mm. I imagine you'd want to do it if you were staying in your house for quite a long time then, or perhaps it would increase the sale value if you did move on?
I think that's another thing that's got to be considered, because obviously, with these schemes, I mean, there have been some instances where people tried to sell their house and actually the seller or the buyer actually wants the whole scheme removed. So you've got to bear that in mind. I mean, some people aren't going to see it as an attraction, because some of these things can actually be quite ugly on top of your roof. Mm. So that's a very important thing to consider. I mean, these contracts are for 20 to 25 years, especially if you look, there's lots of these solar power companies out there who are actually offering to pay all these upfront costs for you. They kind of give you electricity savings, but they actually take control of the extra payments from this FIT scheme. Mm. But obviously you're signing a contract for 25 years for solar power. So it's such a long time that you do need to consider it carefully and see exactly what you're signing up for.
Mm. Okay, thanks for that, Tanya. Lots to consider there if you're considering putting a wind turbine on your roof. And if you'd like to know more about how to install a wind turbine or solar panel, look out for Tanya's article in FT Money this weekend. But that's all for this week's FT Money Show. Remember, you can get weekday news updates on our website, ft.com/money. And you can read and comment on our latest blog posts at ft.com/moneymatters. We'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Steve, Tanya, and our special guest, Claire Barrett of the Investors Chronicle.
Goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.